Our students and faculty are pushing the limits of music, dance, and theater all over the world. And with your support, their artistry and ingenuity will see no end. We invite you to explore some of Berkeley's current philanthropic priorities and learn about our schools and campuses in Boston and beyond. To learn more, please visit berkeley.edu/giving.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Berkeley Alumni's Pass the Mic, where we pass the mic to you. My name is Jaquel Illy.
I'm Patrick Farma, and I'm outside.
We are outside, literally. We are outside. Where are we?
We are in, there's a little park in the middle of the Prudential Center. We talked about going to 8 Haviland to go outside with the students, but it's a lot of construction and stuff going on. So it was actually my pitch for us to do this outside. Today, because the weather's nice, you know, you've all dealt with the Boston winters, and you know, yes. It's nice to be outside. But I hated when the teacher would say, "Let's have class outside today," and everybody would be so amped up, and I'd be like, "Can we just sit and learn? I don't like sitting on grass."
Fair.
I'm not an outside person. I'm not a camper. I don't do that stuff. So.
Same here. But I think as an adult now, I appreciate that because, you know, maybe the teacher just needed a break themselves, you know? And out here, it's a little bit more manageable. Not too many bugs. There's a fountain with a duck on it. Yep. So it's some great scenery
Jaquel
over here.
Jaquel is very concerned about this duck.
Like, how did it even get up there? But
also, we just got back from our year-end celebration with our student employees.
Yes. At the end of the year, we always love to show appreciation to all that they do. Our student workers work so hard in any and everything, always there when we ask them for something to do. So we just wanted to give back, had some cake. But then we also celebrated the graduating students. Mm-hmm. We had one from the Alumni Affairs team and then also one from Annual Giving.
Yep. And you know both of them because Denny has done a lot of our advertisements over the past couple of years. And then who was the other one?
The other one is Jonah.
Jonah's been on this podcast ride with us from the very beginning. He's edited almost every single episode, and
Literally. He's
an MP&E student. And in 2 days, he will be an MP&E graduate.
Yes, class of 2025. And so we was able to sit down with him, not today, another day, but we was able to just, you know, ask him some questions and interview him and just to get you guys a better understanding of who he is and what he's about. So,
and an understanding of what it's like to work with Jaquel and me.
Absolutely, yeah. So enjoy. Well, Patrick and I were just talking like, you know what? We talk about Jonah so much. The people need to hear his voice.
Mm-hmm. Hi, everyone.
Jonah's been working on the podcast since the first episode, helping us edit and all that good stuff. So just as much as it's our baby, it's also kind of his as well.
Yeah, Jonah's the third character.
Yeah.
The behind the scenes. Yeah. Yes,
I try absolutely. To be.
What's it like being on the back end of the podcast?
Definitely learning the information before everybody else, which is a great thing. So I kind of get a lot of knowledge before the people hear it. So all the interviews are kind of like giving me an insight to people's lives and how they kind of went through Berkeley and kind of taking that into consideration, how I can make my way through Berkeley and afterwards as well. So it's a cool insight. And I've learned a lot of editing stuff as well, certain tips and tricks to kind of make my process a little bit easier, quicker, so I can kind of do more at once and kind of fill my plate. You know how we like to talk about filling our plates.
Tell them, what do we say in our meetings?
So basically, the more we put on our plate, the more we can eat.
Right. So we like to talk about in our meetings like, yeah, we have a lot coming up. Things are getting busy, but we can't complain about eating when we just wanted our plate to be
exactly.
filled anyway. So yeah. It's like, it's our mindset. We are go-getters, and I love that about us.
Wow. Yeah. See, I'm learning something now, too. All right. So who do you dread editing the most, me or Jaquel?
Ooh. Uh-huh. It's, I mean, you. I do have to edit some of the ums.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, they're trying to get, see, I'm doing it as well, but trying to get those out of it, but still making the audio sound like one.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the trickiest part.
Also, just to mention, so last season we had a theme music, but this season we have a new theme music, and Jonah created it.
I did, yeah.
Add some claps for yourself at this point. Because I will. Did so good. Like, I love it. I love the whole concept and stuff. So I just want to give you your props.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that was ultimately the simplest one, and simple goes a long way.
Yeah.
So kind of had to make that executive decision for myself.
And I love how you included everybody in it. Like, hey, here's some samples that I have. What do you think about this? Yeah. And you was open to feedback, which I thought was really key. But lastly, I wanted to ask, what's your favorite part about working with us in like the podcast?
Wow, now I had to think about this a little bit because I can't just give like an immediate answer. But my favorite part is just kind of like you guys conform to how it would make it easier for me, which is greatly appreciated. And I truly do value that because there would be others that would just not do that. And then also the open communication is always great.
It was a rocky start in the beginning because we didn't even have the equipment really.
Yeah.
You know, we were using wireless lavalier mics and just kind of whatever we had to see what we could do. Mm. And then I think once we got the proof of concept, people were like, okay, all right, you can invest in this a little.
Yeah. We were figuring it out.
Yeah.
But we're here.
And then there definitely was a meeting where I apologized to Jonah about the about what we were sending him. I was like, it's getting better. You're just dealing with the first chunk.
Yeah. No, it's definitely improved, which I'm greatly appreciative of.
So you're kind of at the end of your Berkeley clip.
Sadly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you got coming up?
I'm planning to release a EP at the end of the year, hopefully, if everything goes well.
It will.
It's kind of a little piece of my life that I'm talking about. I wrote the lyrics, pretty much all of it. I produced all of it, presumably moved to New York. That's the plan. And then maybe do a career change.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Kind of want to do a little bit more on the business side. Mm-hmm. I've been taking some classes for a business. So, yeah, kind of want to explore that field a little bit, but still have music close to my heart. So. Sure.
And also, too, if you need a side gig, you now can go get a job with Audible or some other podcast or something. And you have the resume.
I have the experience. Yeah.
You can say you've worked on the award-winning Pass the Mic podcast at Berklee College of Music.
No, that's a big achievement.
Huge.
Yeah.
I'm excited for you. I know you're going to do great things.
Yeah, I kind of like brush it off in a sense because like I wasn't like, oh, okay, this is my job, right? So I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, cool. But then like when I deeped it, I was like, wow, this is I'm at the award-winning podcast. That's crazy,
right?
Talk that. I know that's right, Jonah. Yeah, let them know we really are them. So yes, y'all, that was Jonah. It's a bittersweet moment. It's always sad when we get so close to our students and then they have to leave, but we are so happy for them and all the successes that they will get into after here.
Especially Jonah's been with us for 3 years. So, you know, giving him a hug goodbye today and sending him on his way is like, it's kind of weird that we're not going to be working with him. But Jonah will be in New York. So if anybody's looking for a good engineer in New York, reach out to us and we can connect you with Jonah.
Yes. Good luck out there, Jonah.
So who do we have today, Jaquel?
Yes. Today we have a special episode with alum Gus Borner. Gus Borner is an MPNE graduate, a producer and engineer, and has worked on many really cool films such as The Guardians of the Galaxy, The Equalizer, and even The Guilty.
He also did Emancipation and Deadpool 2.
Yes.
He's won 6 Grammy Awards and 14 Latin Grammy Awards.
Mm. Yeah.
And he's worked with Latin pop artists like Luis Miguel, Placido Domingo, and even Ricky Martin.
He is doing his thing.
We also had another guest sit in with us, which was Zach Lucia, one of our West Coast colleagues. We asked Zach to come in because he knows a little bit more about the business side of this stuff.
And thank you, Zach.
We said, please help us, Zach. So Zach is in on this interview as well. And we just had a good time talking to Gus.
So here is the interview. Enjoy. Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit more about your life after Berklee? Like, what were your steps? Like, what did you do once you graduated?
So after I walked May of 89 and did one more class through the summer semester. Mm-hmm. And then September 1st or something, end of August, we put all our stuff into a Ryder truck, U-Haul. And I had an old VW Rabbit that we hanged on the back, we towed. So we drove and never looked back. You know, we drove for 12 days, camped across the country because it was cheap, you know. It was summer, no air conditioning because it was, you know, gas was expensive for us. And we got to LA, you know, and I started, you know, the career, you know, I send letters on mail. On USPS, you know, good old mail, not email, mail, snail mail, and 400 letters before I left, and then 200 letters more when I got there. And
to who?
To studios.
Okay.
Looking for internships.
Really?
Yeah, looking for jobs, you know, for whatever, you know. And then finally somebody called and left a message on my answering machine, you know, and I called them back, and I got an internship. The first one, I got fired, you know, from being cocky. first lesson on life, you know, in my career, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just told him in the panel, you know, it wasn't cocky, but I used a piece of gear in the studio that the engineer said it was broken, you know, and I made him look bad, you know, with the owner, you know. So at the end of that day, he's like, dude, you're out of here. You're overqualified, you know. So I learned my lesson really quick. And then I got another internship, and that turned into an assistant job and the engineer. And then in that studio, I became a chief engineer. It was old Giorgio Moroder's studio in the 70s. They had done Donna Summer, Village People, Billy Idol. And then this new owner had it in the 80s, late 80s. And they had two important clients. One of them is a Latin producer, which I hooked up. And then we ended up doing, you know, Placido Domingo. And, mm-hmm. and we did early on a Luis Miguel record that sold like 20 million records to the date. Wow. So a bunch of, and the good thing about that music was just, it was all organic. It was all drums. It was Vinnie Colaiuta on drums, you know, Lee Sklar on bass, Luis Conte. So I got to be friends with those guys back then that I still are my friends. I still call for records and stuff. At the same time, I was doing like hip hop at night, and I did whatever it took, you know. I was doing like 110 hours a week. And the other good client that they had was Randy Edelman, was a film scoring composer, you know. So that's what I started, like the kind of like the two careers, you know, in parallel. So I was doing films, and it was the beginning of surround, which was like 4-channel surround. So like the tech side of things, you know, because, you know, I was young and I came from Berklee and I had all this information and all this energy, you know. The owner was like, well, just go figure it out. So I did figure it out. And I was still a nerd back then. And I figured out all the surround stuff, you know, which was the beginning, you know. Now we're in Atmos, you know, so it's still, you know, very cool how it's evolving, you know, but that's started back then. And then I became a freelancer, you know, and I was through, you know, working on all the studios in Los Angeles, Capitol and Conway and Ocean Way, you know. So I got to see all the studios. And the cool thing about the industry back then, especially, you know, how the information was shared. Mm-hmm. You know, the first time I did strings at Capitol, I had no clue. You know, I knew where to put the mic, but I asked the assistant. The assistant was, I remember he was very old. He was 40, you know, and I was like 21 or 22. And he's like, oh, don't worry about it. You know, we're going to put it here and here and such puts it like this and Al Schmidt puts it like this. And so that was like the transfer of information, you know, that I'm still doing today. You know, what's what, like this is really cool because it's a community that, you know, you get to learn from, you know, which was kind of like the height of the recording. You know, there were 400 studios in Los Angeles back then.
Wow.
You know, so it was the height of the recording, you know, art as it was back then. It's changed and it's cool and it's different and there's great stuff happening, but that was the artistic side of it on our end was a little different. And you know, like equipment and big boards and big rooms, you know, so it was awesome. So through the 90s, I was a freelance. And then 2000, I want a place of my own, you know, to be comfortable, to have my own speakers, you know, instead of switching 2 weeks at a time, different studios. So I opened up Igloo Music, which is, it was one studio. And now we're 18 studios.
Wow.
You know, we have 4 buildings and we have 50 people, out of which about 25 or 26 are Berklee alumni. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I kept bringing people in, you know, like I moved in 89 and in 90, the place I was working, they needed another assistant. So I called my buddy from Berklee, you know, that was the first, you know, Berklee placement, you know, I done in LA. And ever since, you know, I lost count, but it's probably like a couple hundred people, you know, that it was an intern for me, or like I sent interns somewhere else or placed, you know. So it's great. So we have a good crew.
I feel like the past 24 hours, I've seen a lot of that Berklee networking muscle being used, you know, with the Career Jam, Alumni Achievement Awards, just seeing people move around the room and talk to each other. And it's been quite the sight to watch. I know we always talk about it, but then when you see it in action, it's still kind of like, whoa.
And it's easy now because obviously these events, you know, and just social media, you know, so like when you graduate here and you move on, you're still in touch with everybody that you want to be in touch.
Right.
Back then it was more organic. It was like, I had to pick up the phone and call my buddy. Say, like, hey, you want a job? Mm-hmm. You know, come over. You know, I had to leave a message on his tape voicemail.
Mm-hmm.
So it's come a long way and it's much better. It's great, you know, because now you can, you know, we just had in the panel with studio managers, you know, the Village and Power Plant and everything. And it's great to be able to like interconnect like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you just mentioned like a lot of Berklee alums work at your company. And so how is it like having kind of like-minded people around you? And like yesterday you also was talking about how you also still learn from them. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Exactly. Well, I think as you get older, not that I'm old, but as you get older, you know, surrounding yourself with younger people with the energy and knowledge too, because you know they're like, you know, they can find stuff or they pop up in social media and stuff, and so they nurture you, you know, they learn from you. Obviously you're an old dog, you know how to put a mic, how to record an orchestra, but you know they might show you how to process the orchestra in a different way today, you know. Mm-hmm. and it's really cool because I learn a lot and they learn, and as a team, as a, you know, as a crew, you know, we move forward. And when I started, you know, one of my you know, bigger or breaks, you know, was working with Lalo Schifrin. Lalo Schifrin was, he did Mission Impossible 100 years ago, and he did 150 films. And I started, I became his engineer for scoring. And then because of that, like, legit sound, I started working with some of the younger composers that wanted, like, the legit sound, but they wanted somebody that wasn't afraid of, you know, guitars and fuzz and like, distortion, you know. So I was a young guy there, and I brought in that, you know, and that allowed me to, like, start doing, I mean, still today, you know, one of the guys that I started working with, now we're doing, we just did Guardians of the Galaxy 3, and we're doing Superman, and he does the orchestra, but he's all about, like, you know, distorted bass, you know. So you know, so that energy that I could bring in, you know, when I was young, that's what I'm looking for now, you know. Yeah. It's like people that can come in, because now I'm the old guy. You know, I'm the old guy. And then, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, we work with the team, so they might come in and say, hey, try this, or there's a new, you know, distortion. We distort the orchestra, we do all sorts of, you know, crazy things. And since the technology keeps evolving so fast, you know, I need that, you know, that feedback and that support from them. And it's been great. I mean, the only reason I can be here today talking to you guys about all this stuff is because I have the whole crew backing me up.
I've been fascinated lately about, all right, well, you start out and then you get the big gig or whatever. But how does that work out in between?
35 years.
Yeah.
35 years, many sleepless nights, long hours, patience, dedication, humility, you know. I think, I mean, luck, we call it luck, you know. Luck is when opportunities show up and you're ready, you know. And I was ready because I went to Berkeley, basically, you know. So when the first opportunity came around, you know, hey, can you do this? Can you do that? It's like, yeah, you know. So you kind of make your own luck, or you push your luck, or you push your you know, life or your career to find the opportunities. So when the opportunities came around, you know, I grabbed them. And, you know, I think it's, you know, just consistency, you know, just being there and being ready. And LA is a big town, but it's a small community, you know, so people kind of know who's doing what. So the first time I did a gig with Lalo, you know, through a friend that was his programmer, Rui Folguera, who's also a Berkeley, probably like came out of 1991, 1992. He recommended me, I mean, network, organic network back then, as a friend, you know, recommended me to the gig. And when I started working with Lalo, you know, the head of New Line Cinema back then, you know, of music, he, you know, being in the studio, you know, the next time, you know, he's the one that actually hooked me up with John Murphy, the composer for Guardians Now, and Superman coming up. But because John was Liverpool, you know, he moved to LA and he was looking for an engineer. And, you know, the head of music saw me and it's like, oh, you got to call Gus, you know. So it's just being there, and you never know who's going to be in the room that might get you the next gig. And you never know when your next gig is going to be from that person. You know, I did In Sync in 2001. In Sync, I was like Ricky Martin. I did an Unplugged 2004. And his manager called me 6 months ago to do like an immersive thing for Apple for another artist, you know. Wow. And he's like, hey, are you still doing, 20 years later, wow, are you still doing it? Yeah, I'm still around. It's like, oh, yeah, you're perfect, you know, but 20 years, you know. Right. So those relationships take a long time, you know, to develop, and you never know when. You can't expect, hey, because you do a record with somebody, the next record might be in 2 years, you know, so you got to fill in the gap somehow.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah.
So you've mentioned you worked on many projects, whether they are music or movies. Do you have a favorite project or something that,
you know, yeah. I like the variety, you know. I like doing a film today because I go to Abbey Road, you know, Guardians, you know, we're there for a month, we record and then a mix, and the, you know, director James Gunn shows up and starts talking about the next project, you know, so it's really exciting and fun. Mm-hmm. But in film scoring, you're serving the film. You know, so this is cool for a couple of months. But then when I do a record, you know, the record, you don't serve anybody. You serve the music, you know. Mm-hmm. So then your mindset, you know, you change the your operating system, you know. Mm-hmm. And then you work on a record. I love producing because, you know, I get to make some calls that sometimes, you know, I wish I could make when I'm just engineering. You know, I also like working with a producer because I learn a lot and we do things I wouldn't have thought about, you know, video games, and like we do a lot of streaming now. So I think you learn a little bit from everything, you know. It's like when I used to do hip hop, you know, and the beginning of samplers and stuff, and then I started doing films, you know, I was using some of the techniques, you know, like low end and like subharmonics, you know, on drums and stuff that I stolen from the hip hoppers. So I think at least in my experience, you know, just not saying no to anything ever, you know, led me into like a variety of things. And I have a crew right now and people do specific things, you know, so some people are doing the streaming, some people are doing like the, you know, I have a lady that does Anna Mulichin. She's 7 years ago. So she's class of 2016 or 17 and PNE. And she does all the Disney international releases, you know, like mixing and mastering the songs for soundtracks and the films, you know. So we, I kind of like all these little things, you know, I kind of like set up so people still do it. And once in a while, I pop my head and I make sure it's good, but it's fun. You know, it's fun having that support team that can keep doing. And it's because, you know, again, you know, it's like, things kept coming back and I couldn't say no.
Gus, I'm fascinated listening to you talk. You don't really speak about what you set out to do, which I find really interesting in that you talk about your experience of, you know, going to Berklee because you wanted, you know, to pursue music and then, you know, you go to LA. But I'm curious now, you know, here we are 35 years later and you've had such a wide variety of career and accomplished so many different things. And still you don't really talk about like, well, what was, you know, kind of my goal through that. You just really, it's very infectious because you talk about like, oh, I just bring it all, you know, you kind of just like take it all in and make something of it that is like, kind of like uniquely you, but I don't know if this resonates as something that you've realized about yourself but it's really interesting to me that you,
I'm very aware.
Okay, great. Well, can you talk more about that? Like, that's something that is clearly unique about you, and I'd love to hear kind of your perspective.
I think a lot of people have to go through the same thing. I think you come out of here, you know, and in 89, you know, I went to LA, and every engineer wanted to be Michael Jackson's engineer or U2's engineer, you know. And I realized that the reality check was there's only one Michael Jackson engineer, there's only one U2 engineer, and our career is such a passionate, you know, thing. It's not like working in a bank, you know, it's, you know, people don't retire, you know, we work until we die, you know, so the slots are very
limited,
so you can't, if you wait until you're like John Williams engineer, you know, he's still using Sean Murphy, you know, right, for the last 50 years, you know, so the reality check was like, I just gotta do whatever I'm thrown, you know, so it's like life showed me its own curse, you know, curse, not curse, C-U, C-O-U, you know, or both, you know. So, you know, when the first, I mean, I never had done anything for Latin music, you know, but I got there, you know, I by chance, you know, this producer was sitting there. We did this record and it was like a catalog record, but it became huge and my name was tied to it. So life kind of like made its own decisions and I just like, went with it. I mean, it sounds like a very zen, very hippie approach, but it was a realistic approach. I had to leave. I had to make money, right, you know. So if you tell me, it's like, hey, there's a session, there's a hip hop session at 4 o'clock in the morning, boom. You know, I did records with Kid and Play, you know. I don't know if anybody
remembers.
House Party. I did House Party 2 or 3. What? You know, they call me No Fuss Gus. You know? And I say yes, you know, it's like, whatever, you know. So I was their engineer for a while there, and then I was doing the record, and then I was doing live. Somebody called me for a live record, and I said yes. You know, I figured it out. You know, I think it's always it's just still sound. You know, so you can figure it out. You know, and then I became, you know, I started working on Jazz Fest in New Orleans. I was chief engineer for like 3, 4, 5 years. You know, so like all this music coming through. You know, so you just keep learning and you keep getting better and faster. You know, so I think all the experience that you can get, you know, nurtures you, and then you don't get pigeonholed for good or bad, you know, because if I was like an R&B mixer, you know, I might be like having a career as that, I could be making tons of money, but then I'll be making only just that, you know, I'll be doing just that. So for me, it's been kind of cool, you know, and then all that obviously turned into president of a company, you know, which I don't even want to say because I don't have a title, you know, like everybody at the studio have titles and I'm just like Gus, you know, and it's, you know, school of hard knocks, you know, it's like, again, life is like all of a sudden, hey, you got two people working for you, let's figure it out. And you make a mess, you know, and I still make a mess, you know, but now I have 50 people. So I have an HR lady that makes sure that I don't make a mess.
when you're dealing with these different medium, how do you look at the audience? So if you're looking, I can even think of like when you're looking at a studio recording versus a live performance recording, but then you're going to a film score or a video game score or immersive audio. How are you thinking about the listener?
Everything has its own unique set of rules, not only the audience, but also even terminology. You know, I remember the first time I was in New Orleans, you know, we recorded the first weekend. And then the second weekend, we were going live to TV broadcast using some of the mixes from the first weekend plus live on the second weekend. And through the week, I could like clean up some of the first weekend. And then the producer comes one day listening to some stuff. And he was like, oh, you need a remix on that one. And when he told me remix, I go like, am I adding loops and like making breaks? And he meant remix. So another mix, a new mix, a fresh mix, you know. So, and then in film scoring, you know, I was doing like Miami Vice or one of those films. And I asked the producers, like, what about the soundtrack? Like, oh, we're getting a record guy to do that. Mm-hmm. I go like, okay, fine. And I had like 10 Grammys already. I was like, ah, great. Because they want to know that you're the best for that.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't want to say like, oh, I can do it all. Because then you say, what are you good at it? What are you actually good at it? You know, but, you know, I think each one has its own terminology. And technically, I think there could be different, you know. But, you know, as far as the audience, as far as the end game, that's what is so cool, you know, like when you're, you know, exposed to records and films and games and stuff, because then you can bring it all together to be kind of like, you know, the record, again, we're talking about like, you know, servicing the sound, the music. So if you can do that for a score, you know, and then just figure, now you're doing a record, there's no film. You're going to like close your eyes and going to listen on your earbuds. And, AirPods, earbuds, headphones. So I think it all comes down to, again, to sound. It comes down to emotion. You know, you got to close your eyes and make sure that whatever you're listening, you know, hits a nerve. You know, hits like, you know, I used to listen, you know, when I was a kid, I used to like lay on the floor and listen to Pink Floyd and stuff, you know. And it blew my mind how it can transport you, you know. But also with sound, you know, also with, you know, I think as engineers, producers, we make a difference, you know, because, you know, the same song mixed two different ways can hit you or not. You know, it's the same song. You listen to the lyrics, it's fine. But especially when it was radio, you know, we wanted things to pop. You know, you listen. And nowadays, you know, you listen for the first 5 seconds of a song on Spotify and you keep skipping. Yeah. So if those first 5 seconds captures the audience and you, and you go like, oh shit, this is, something's going on here. I'm going to listen to another 10 seconds, you know, or maybe the full song. I think at the end of the day, you know, it's kind of like the same. You're always going down to like, just making sure that people get, you know, feel that emotion when they listen to your stuff.
Earlier, you were speaking on, you know, your experience with internships. Can you speak a little bit more about the student trips that happen currently and some of the internships that you offer to current students?
Yeah, actually, they were just there. I wasn't there, but Tariq came by. They come by every spring with a group of students. And like last year, I met a couple that actually became interns, you know. So we had an internship program forever, you know, for 20 years at least, you know, aside from originally when I was just bringing people one-to-one. But we have some kind of posting on the career site, and they kind of know about us by now, people, you know, word of mouth. So every semester we have 3 or 4 interns, you know, that, you know, they send us their information, resume, and we have a couple of people at the studio that, you know, go through them and set them up, and then they come in for a couple of weeks, and then like a test period, and then 3 months, 3.5 months, and then it could be prolonged into another 3 months as an extended internship. And everybody that works at the studio started as an intern, you know. So even Nick Baxter, who's now like, you know, he's done La La Land and he's doing the Bob Dylan biopic now, you know, he's Mr. Oscar. He started as an intern, you know, he was making coffee.
Wow.
17 years ago. So because for me, it's a way of making sure that we're on the same path, you know, like that we they get formed in the studio, you know, and the, to our ways, whichever, be it good or bad, I don't care, but it's our ways of doing things, you know. So, and it's really cool, you know, when to see people that showed up first day after school, you know, and then 5 years later, they're mixing an Atmos, you know, a record for Nina Simone, you know, or, you know, we do a lot of Phil Levine. He's also 2016, I think, MP&E. He does all the all our Atmos stuff for Verve, you know, back catalog and new stuff. And, you know, and he's also started as an intern, you know, and you know, but they have to show talent. They have to show, you know, attention to detail, chops, you know, and culture. You know, we worry a lot about, I mean, culture is more important than chops sometimes, you know, because chops you can get, you know, culture, you know, just being able to, you know, to hang out in a session and do what is needed. So, so we can see all those qualities in those 3 months. You know, we see who are the keepers, you know, especially after pandemic, we blew up because pandemic, you know, we were able to turn it around really quick and keep everybody really busy. So that turned into like adding more people really quick. Mm-hmm. So the interns became, you know, basically, back then, if you had a pulse, you had a job. If you had a pulse and you've been to Berkeley and you, yeah, that, you, and you were doing the right thing. Yeah.
It seems like that's really how, you know, you facilitate the community that you want in, at Igloo. One of the things that I was thinking earlier on while you were talking, isn't it? You mentioned how you haven't been back to Berkeley for 35 years, but, you know, from my perspective, I don't know if you know Gus too much, but I've been in Alumni Affairs. I came out in 2014. And, you know, you were one of the first names I heard about as somebody who is a player, a contributor to the, no, a contributor to the LA community. And, you know, my thought was like, you may not have been back to Berkeley for 35 years, but Gus, you brought Berkeley to LA in such a meaningful way. And
no,
really, I
appreciate it. No, and then we've been in touch and Rob and Dan and teachers, you know, from MP&E, Mark and Leanne, they show up every year and I've seen them at AES. We're definitely, I mean, I haven't been back physically, but I mean, we've been very tight, you know, and April, our studio manager, you know, she is constantly talking to the career department. So no, we have a very tight relationship, you know, even though I wasn't physically here, you know.
How do you plan for the future? How do you not stay stagnant? What do you got coming up? What are your plans for?
It's, you know, I feel like I just got there. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm starting every day. You know, it's like I don't think you can ever be too comfortable or established because, you know, life shows you. You have a client for 10 years and they might turn around and go with somebody else next day. You know, so you always constantly have to be, it's like life of a freelancer. You know, it's mm-hmm. I have a friend that says like, yeah, how you doing? Oh, you know, freelancer, you know, in 3 months from bankruptcy, you know, and it don't matter if you're making 10 bucks or 1,000 bucks, you know, you're always 3 months from bankruptcy. Yeah. You know, so I think that push leads you to like keep engaging and trying and like every time somebody comes through the studio, you know, I'm so happy and I show it, you know, it's like I want to make sure that they have the best experience ever, you know, and same thing with the rest of the crew, you know, they're all, you know, we're very thankful, you know, when somebody comes in and we're very excited too, because, you know, it's like we're doing what we love, you know, so if he turns, hey, I want to do a record, it's like, awesome, great, let's do it. And you're going to get paid. What? So I don't know. I think it's the same. You know, I think it's just the same as the first day. Obviously, you know, different parameters, you know, but I don't think I can't ever feel like, okay, great. So now I can sit here and wait for people to call, you know, because it's just like every call has to be like, yeah, let's do this. And now social media, and now I want, you know, my crew to be able to have that experience and have that network, you know, the way they're doing it now. So the community, you know, we need to keep building it, but with the new tools, you know, so what's going to happen in 5 years? You know, how are people going to know about us? You know, so it's like the younger generation that is showing up at the studio, they're friends with the younger generation that's working on the labels and in the studios, you know, the film studios. So those are the ones that need to be talking to each other, because those are the ones that are going to be, when we're all old playing golf, you know, they're the ones that are going to have to figure out, you know, who's next and who's going to come in the studio. Makes me tired.
Well, I guess it's that thing too of like, when you have other people, when you're not just like Gus Borner Inc., like, and you have those other people, you, I guess that pushes you to make sure that they're rising up. And it's very clear that that's important to you, that you're supporting all these folks. Exactly. I mean, otherwise, why would you have like 50 people, you know?
Right. No, 100%. And it's just a matter of like, yeah, making sure that we can all as a team keep progressing and keep getting busy, and they have their families and they have kids, you know, we have, you know, the whole extended family, you know, so it's, but it's because of them that we can keep doing it. When I get, if, and it started from like, you know, when I was just Gustavo Borner Inc., you know, I got a call, and then someday I got two calls, you know, I go like, oh, you know, how are we gonna, how am I gonna, you know,
balance,
clone myself. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my second in command, you know, I go like, hey, dude, you know, tomorrow we're going to be mixing. And I told my clients, like, I can't do it, but I have my right hand and I'm going to supervise it. So then it was two, and then it was three, and then another room and another studio. And now we have 18 studios because so I can't say no.
Right. No. Yeah. What's that like?
But it's also because of the clients, you know, confidence, you know, like, yeah, like they or comfort level, you know, they go like, I mean, I had a guy say like, I said like, hey, I'm busy, but we'll get it done. It's like, I don't care who in there does it. I know it's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And that's the best slogan I can ever ask for, you know, people, having that confidence in like, okay, we're going to, and that I'm going to supervise. I'm going to sit there. I'm going to make sure it's done right, you know. So that's the way we keep progressing, you know, because the first time you see somebody to film, to do a score or do a record, do a vocal, you know, it's like you're sitting behind them, you got their back, but they gotta, you know, get up to the line and do it, you know. Yeah. So it's very exciting as, you know, father figure for whatever it's worth, you know, like seeing the kids, you know, blossom and do their thing.
It's awesome.
Like proud, being proud of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm proud.
Absolutely.
I'm not father, big brother.
Big brother.
Older, much older brother.
Oh, just kidding.
I'm curious, what do you do to play these days?
Oh, it's very important. You know, I learned early on that your passion can't be your hobby.
That's right.
Because you get burnt, you know, and then ask me how I know it. I like cars. You know, when I was here, I used to work in Somerville, you know, delivering auto parts, and they had a garage, and I bought my first, you know, Rabbit, and I used to fix it, you know. So I always loved cars, you know, but that was like hands on, you know.
Yeah.
So now I have a little shop and I restore old cars, you know, and I show them, you know, it's like, so it's very, you know, like hands on mechanical, you know, but you can't pick up the phone with a greasy hand.
You know? Perfect. That's exactly what you need.
Yeah. And it's next to the studio. So it's my therapy, you know, Mm. You know, I build, you know, I rebuild like my first car a few years ago, and then I build one for my wife so we can both go to shows, you know, together. And she's part of the thing. She will go pick up the paint or like call, you know. So we have a little shop, you know, mechanic shop next to one of the studios. So I can be there on a Saturday morning, you know, with a shop door open. And then I love it when people show up and I'm dressed as a mechanic with Christina. It's like, oh, you have such an easy seat. Like, I let you in. And they look at me like, oh, why is the next door mechanic letting me to the studio, you know? But it's also good, you know, I park them in there, you know, so in the studio there's a carport, so people coming in, you know, it's always like a, you know, Tim Allen, you know, he is Buzz Lightyear, so he's been in the studio many times, and he's also a car collector, a fan. So instead of funny, we'll go around, we start driving cars, so, and then people go like, hey, we need to get the session started. I'm sorry.
Having too much fun.
Well, Rob and Dan always like to take a peek too, right?
Yeah, they yes.
Yes.
Definitely yeah. mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah. The last one I've been working on for like 7, 8 years is electric. So I converted an old 1960 Porsche into electric, you know. So that's always the, you know, everybody gets really excited about. I mean, it's a lot of work. It's not easy. But it's so much fun because it's like very fast. And so it's always like a thing, you know. The cars and just, you know, in summer, you know, going to the beach or like winter going to skiing, you know, you need to break and, you know, and the only way I can do that now, 35 years later, is because I have the team and I have the name and I can afford to, you know, break a leg here and there. Literally.
I heard the implication there.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Gus, for spending some time with us and answering these cool questions. All right, y'all, we are back, and that was our interview with Gus Borner. What'd you think about it, boss?
The thing that stood out to me was just the freelancing mentality that he has. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't bring this up in the opener, but, you know, he started Igloo Music, and he, you know, has been taking on a lot of people in that organization.
Yeah, I think that that's really cool, especially the fact that he's definitely looking out for Berklee alumni and, you know, hiring them. I think it just kind of speaks to the alumni community and how they look after one another and help them reach to that next level that they're looking for.
Right. And I think it's interesting because, you know, when we talked to Mark Kelly earlier this year, he was talking about how having a kid kind of changed his mentality of, you know, when you decide you're going to go through this life of seeking a career in the arts and being an artist, you can do that yourself. But then once you have other people involved, like children and stuff, like you're not just making that decision for yourself, you're making that for other people. And right. you need to make sure that you're doing your due diligence to be successful in that so that you can not only support yourself, you can support other people. Like you can have all the ramen noodles that you want to have for your dinner. But if you have a child, maybe not. Every night is a good night to have ramen noodles, which ramen I say noodles. That as a parent of a child that will only eat ramen noodles. But that's a personal problem.
Okay. Yeah.
But, you know, Gus talking about how he started off freelancing and he stumbled. He got fired from his first thing because he said he was too cocky. But he, you know, he was with, it was him and his wife, and then he had to support them. And then he started getting more jobs than he could handle. So he started bringing more people on.
Right.
And so there's that freelance mentality of getting more jobs and getting more clients and trying to get repeat jobs. But now all of a sudden he's in charge of an organization that has a lot of people. And he, so he's still hustling to make sure that he's not only supporting himself, but also the people that agreed to work with him.
Yes. And that just makes me, you know, think of all the times we talk about the importance of collaboration. Like, you know, it's cool to handle things alone, but then it's like that teamwork makes the dream work, you know, saying is really a thing. Like when you have people and you're bringing them on to help and collaborating with them, it helps elevate and bring projects to the next level. So
absolutely.
Shout out to him.
And that brings us to the conclusion of this episode, which is only marked by the loud people next to us getting up and leaving after we've recorded this whole session.
What? They had a great conversation over there.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if the audience will hear it. So who do we have playing us out today, Jaquel?
Yes. Today we have the Bean Tones, and the Bean Tones is a barbershop quartet. And I had the pleasure of meeting with them a couple of weeks ago, and they sung to me and they said my name and they just did so well, like amazing. So the song that we have playing out is A Trout, No Doubt.
Folks who fish, beware. You may not know exactly what goes on down there. I'm a fisherman who has got the knack, but I gave it all up today.
Why, James?
'Cause I felt so sad when I caught a shad who had these words to say. A trout, no doubt. My papa was a trout, no doubt. My papa was a trout, though he's stout.
For a trout, there's no doubt.
He's a whopper of a trout throughout.
a bass with class. My mama was a bass with class. My mama was a bass.
She surpassed any bass
with her class.
My mama was a classy bass. Uncle Gus is an octopus. He lives in a sunken schooner. Cousin Ish is a musical fish.
A local piano tuner.
Oh well, all hail. My brother is a whale, all hail. My high brother is a whale,
though he's frail.
Drinks his ale from a pail.
My brother is an ailing whale. And that's the end of this fishy tale. Is an octopus. He lives in a sunken schooner. Cousin Ish is a musical fish.
The local piano salmon.
A duck named Chuck. My neighbor was a duck named Chuck. My neighbor was a duck. Just as lucky, he was struck by a truck. He never was a lucky ducky. That's my neighbor whose name is Chuck. Now if you missed what the gist of our story's about, we're happy to remind you.
A trout, no doubt.